Media shouldn't be one note. Support Rabble.ca and a diversity of voices in Canadian media. Visit rabble.ca/donate to contribute.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. I guess the question is, do all governments lie? And that is what we are about to talk about with Fred Peabody. His new film, new documentary film, that is, that you're going to absolutely, as a Rabble listener, have to see, All Governments Lie, Truth, Deception, and the Spirit of I.F. Stone. Fred is a great guy, passionate guy, who has a lot to say about not only the filmmaking process, but also about... The corporate coup d'etat that is going on and has gone on in North America, in the West, and around the world. This is a film, again, it's a great film. It's an important film. This was, I believe, the world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. Fred Peabody and I have a fun and interesting, I think, conversation about what's next and about how to be hopeful in what appears to be sometimes a pretty cynical and jaded world. DavidPeckLive.com, Rabble.ca for more podcasts. You can find my book, Real Change is Incremental, online. If you'd like to book me as a speaker or as a podcaster, check us out or check me out on DavidPeckLive.com. And coming right up, Fred Peabody on his new film, All Governments Lie, Truth, Deception, and the Spirit of I.F. Stone. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We are joined by a very special guest today, Fred Peabody, and he's here at the Toronto International Film Festival celebrating his latest film, All Governments Lie, Truth, Deception, and the Spirit of I.F. Stone. World premiere was a couple days ago.
Yeah, Friday.
Couple more screenings. Yep. Standing ovation, I understand.
I was thrilled.
Did you get any sleep that night, I guess is the question.
I actually did, but I was kind of, because I was so tired, but it's been... exhausting but exciting. My first time at TIFF with a film. It's my first feature film. I've done a lot of work in television, particularly television news magazines, including the Fifth Estate. And you don't hear the audience. You don't see the audience. Right. You don't get standing ovations.
That's right. So imaginary standing ovations, right?
Pardon?
Imaginary. Yeah, standing ovations.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I suppose. I would like to think that, but. No, it's been a thrill, but more importantly, it's been really gratifying to do a film that I think can do some good in the world, and can point out the importance of independent, investigative, adversarial journalists speaking truth to power, holding governments accountable, and exposing government lies. And I'm just really happy that we got the film made, and also that we paid tribute to the late, great I.F. Stone, who's inspired a lot of journalists, but is little known to the public.
So are there critics? Are there people that are going to say, oh, Fred, come on, you got it made. You got funded. So what the hell are you going on about, right? Are you going to get that kind of pushback, or have you already had that?
I don't know. I mean, I was fortunate to have a great executive producer, Peter Raymond, president of White Pine Pictures, who himself has done many more feature documentaries than I have, and many of them having to do with injustice and media. And fortunately, he handled the fundraising. I'm just focused on getting this film out into the world, and
it's great
reaching it. Reaching people in their 20s particularly. Yeah. That's always what I had in mind. Because I think with this film, I hope we can encourage the next crop of I.F. Stones and Amy Goodmans.
Which is a direct quote, isn't it? Right out of the film, right? About near the end of the film, somebody says this really is about challenging another group of younger I.F. Stones.
Yeah, well, we have Jeremy Scahill from The Intercept,
right.
Who's actually speaking to students at Ithaca College.
He's at a conference or something. Yeah,
and Michael Moore also says something to that effect.
Well, Moore's got a great quote at the end that I can pull up here in a second. It's going to take me a second to find it. But just about the whole idea that you can change, right?
Yeah, right. And the other great one that comes to mind is Michael Moore saying in our film, I can trace everything I've done in my career back to the fact that I subscribed to I.F. Stones Weekly when I was a teenager, which I did as well, and my executive producer, Peter Raymond, also did. So it's something that, you know, those of us in our 60s, I don't know how old Michael Moore is, but I mean,
I don't know either.
I'm definitely in my 60s, and I was in my late teens when I subscribed to I.F. Stones Weekly.
Wow. Wow.
A little four-page newsletter.
And I've got a copy of it here, compliments of Fred, sitting in front of me, a photocopied copy, May 13th, 1968. What happened on that day is the question I have. May 13th, volume 16, number 10, 20 cents. Wow. What a bargain.
Yeah. Or
what
$5 bucks a year to subscribe.
Wow.
And that particular one that I gave you a copy of, his front page story is about the Poor People's March on Washington, I believe it was called, to obviously agitate for justice for the economically deprived, and it was a big march. A lot of famous people took part in it. I think Martin Luther King had planned to be there, but he was dead. He'd been assassinated before. Mm. Anyway, it's a Poor People's March on Washington. So I.F. Stones' rather witty headline is "The Rich March on Washington All the Time,"
referring to
lobbyists, you know, with their suitcases marching on Washington every morning to basically, some would say, corrupt and bribe politicians.
I love the fact that this was probably done on a typewriter.
You talk
about it in the film. I think somebody says in the film that he used two fingers to type it all
out.
And I love that image. I can hear the sound. Mm-hmm. But to Michael Moore's comment, you know, he looks at the camera at the end of the film and he says, you know, you can change the world. You're just going to have to do the hard work.
Right.
Two-finger typing's not an easy thing to do.
No, that part you don't have to do, fortunately.
That's right.
You can touch type if you want, and of course you won't have to do it on an old manual typewriter.
That's right.
You can fix your mistakes much easier because it's a computer. But and also with the internet, you don't have to have a distribution system. I.F. Stone got subscribers. He got a list from some other progressive magazine back in 1953, so that when he started I.F. Stones Weekly, he had about 5,000 subscribers.
Wow.
$5 a year.
It's pretty
and
good.
I don't think he ever changed the price for 20 years.
Wow. Amazing.
And some of those early subscribers included Albert Einstein, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
And that was when she was married to Arthur Miller. And I think through Arthur Miller, I know that she did meet I.F. Stone. And in fact, she bought subscriptions to I.F. Stone's Weekly for the entire U.S. Congress. So, interesting.
Clearly you've fallen in love with I.F. Stone on a variety of levels, I would think.
Yeah, he inspired me.
Kind of plays like a love letter. Sort
he's bedrock to me. Yeah.
Yeah, he's bedrock. Nice.
Yeah.
Are you on board? Do all governments lie?
Well, that is a famous quote by I.F. Stone. He wasn't saying all governments lie all the time.
Mm.
I don't know enough about every government in the world.
Right.
But I haven't seen one yet that I believe hasn't, from time to time, told some whoppers and gotten away with it because the press didn't hold them accountable and acted as stenographers to power. We need, and part of that is just due to a mindset that has, I don't know if it's happened by default, by osmosis, it's just kind of accepted that, well, the government says this and the external affairs minister says that, and you report it. And probably your assignment editor is not going to give you time to check whether it's true or not. So it's partly an element of time and money, but it's also the fact that if you're working in the mainstream media, your news organization is undoubtedly, if you're in Canada or the U.S., owned by a gigantic corporation that is not in the journalism business. And really, its main interest is, of course, to make profit, sell ads. So sometimes things get a little skewed. We mainly concentrate on the U.S. situation because, as Amy Goodman says in our film, government lies cost lives. Mm. And the United States is kind of the poster child for that statement.
I love how you start the film by essentially, I mean, with a form of redaction, really, right in the credits even, which is lovely. But the cross-cutting, the juxtaposition of the different statements being made by these all men? Yes, all men. I think.
I guess
these definitive statements.
Yeah, we do have Condoleezza Rice later in the
That's
film
right.
saying
yes.
we don't want the smoking gun to be
That's
a
right.
mushroom cloud.
That's right. Yes.
And we also have quite a bit in there about Hillary.
Yes.
And
yes.
her donations and a nice skewering of her, if you will, by Cenk Uygur, who
right.
does a show on
yeah.
the internet.
Yeah, talk about a skewer. I mean, holy cow, capital S across the board. These definitive, to Chomsky's point later in the film, objective statements that these men of power are saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the truth. We know the truth. This is where we're leading, and this is why we're going in to Iraq, and so on and so on and so on. All just complete, outright, as it turns out, lies.
Yeah. And you mentioned Chomsky. I mean, I think I'm on a mission to drive up the sales of his brilliant book, Manufacturing Consent.
Oh, come on. It's one of the best.
If you haven't read it, you've got to read it.
Stop listening now if you
stop
haven't
read it. Yeah, go buy it. You can get it at Indigo. There's a nice, I think
I'm
it's like
you.
20th anniversary reissue, a nice trade paperback. It feels like it could have been written yesterday, and it gives you the kind of the matrix, the wireframe of this system that is set up, under which the mainstream media in the U.S. he's talking about, but probably applies elsewhere. The mainstream media functions as a tacit propaganda arm for powerful government and corporate elites. That's about the simplest way sum up that book.
But made into a great film, too, in the 80s,
yeah.
I think, by a couple
mm-hmm.
of Montreal filmmakers, actually.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful book. I'm so glad you brought that up. Colin Powell's line, quote, "Facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence." Really? Are you kidding me?
I know. He must be so embarrassed.
He's
not a stupid man. And I think
from
what I've read, he knows it. It was a mistake to probably even become Secretary of State.
Is it as bad as it seems? You know, I think it was either Michael Moore or Jeremy who said it's a total sideshow.
Yeah.
Is it really that circus-like in your mind?
Well, yeah, and Jeremy Scahill from The Intercept, which he co-founded with Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras, if I recall correctly, he said, you know, there are people out there who think Obama's going to come and take their guns, and there are people who think, you know, FEMA, which is the Emergency Management Association, it's the Emergency Management Association
sure.
or something like that.
Yeah, yep.
Federal is the F at the beginning. But FEMA is going to come and put them in internment camps.
Right. So
you know,
much fear.
That's
fear. All fear-based.
Yes, fear. And that's all a sideshow. He goes on to say, what they don't realize is that the coup already happened.
Right.
And it's a coup under which, a corporate coup, under which corporations took total control of the political system in the United States. I have to agree with them. You know, the coup has already happened. You know, there's a... an excellent Canadian writer, John Ralston Saul, who wrote a book called Voltaire's Bastards.
I'm a fan of Unconscious Civilization. That's
yeah.
probably my
yeah.
favorite. Yeah,
well, Chris Hedges, who is mm-hmm. also in our film, probably well known to your audience, Chris Hedges, whenever he uses the term corporate coup d'etat, he credits it to John Ralston Saul, who, and I went back and checked, and I believe John Ralston Saul used the term back in 1995 in one of his books. And guess he's a bit of a visionary. But now it's a term that just feels so appropriate.
Do you think, so Orwell, big state, power, politics, etc., Huxley, Brave New World, you know, we've all taken this drug. Is that Scahill's point, in a sense, that we missed it? It was hiding, like there's another line from the film, hiding in plain sight. We missed it quite a while ago. Now it's time to wake up. And get busy, do the hard work, as Michael Moore says.
Yeah, I sometimes use the phrase, you know, it's time. We need to try to get the public, the citizens of Canada, the U.S., to unplug from the mainstream media matrix, because it is like that movie, The Matrix, where everybody's plugged into this thing, and then when you unplug from it, you realize it's all a sham. And an evil one at that.
What was the Q&A like at TIFF? Was it about the film? Was it about the people? Was it about the potential for change, for hope? I mean, I got to say, this year I've seen a lot of docs. I've interviewed quite a few filmmakers that are coming out of some pretty tragic, difficult situations. Mm-hmm. But without a doubt, I would say that there's a theme of hope, and a theme that we really need to start paying more attention.
About
everything, you know, about each other,
right,
etc.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of people under 30 in the audience, and I have great hope for them because they already get it. They're not watching the CBS Evening News to get their, you know, I mean, if they are particularly interested in politics, they are probably getting it, if they're under 30, many of them are getting it from rabble.ca, or if they're in BC, there's a great independent website called the Tyee, which is a type of salmon, by the way. That's tyee.com. There's another one, independent news website called, it was the Vancouver Observer, and now they've gone national, so they're the National Observer. But I always mention those two and yours, rabble.ca,
nice,
to people for Canadian Canadian examples of places where you can get independent news sources that are an antidote and an alternative to the mainstream media.
News is meant to be consumed. It's not meant to be reflected on. It's not meant to be thought about. I mean,
well, and it's really meant to sell advertising.
Yeah, right.
So that's what we have to focus on. Yeah, no, we're being sarcastic, but yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that is what it's become. It's just for the huge corporations that own all the media now. I really don't think they could care less about the sort of the noble goals of journalism that they should care about. You know, it's incredibly important. I mean, in the States, they would call them, and I.F. Stone referred to Jeffersonian ideals of free speech and a free press. I mean, I.F. Stone was a big fan of Thomas Jefferson in terms of this idea of, you know, the right to a free press and a free expression. I don't necessarily think it's what you'd call a free press if it's dominated by gigantic corporations which have other agendas.
Do you think people will watch the film and will, for the most part, I mean, I don't know, it depends on the day you ask me, how much caffeine I've had, how well I've slept, if I'm feeling hopeful or not, or if I'm feeling deeply cynical about where we're heading next.
Exactly.
I was just interviewing Paul Schrader about his film Dog Eat Dog, incredibly pessimistic sort of about our future. He would probably just say he's realistic about where we're heading.
Yeah.
What's your sense? I mean, obviously the film is about the splash and ripple effect. It's about affecting change, and it's about your freedom, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to take your life by, you know, and make something of it, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to Michael Moore's point, and to everyone's point, really. You strike me as a pretty hopeful person.
Excuse me. Yeah, I'm hopeful, and I think when you ask that question, I think about Noam Chomsky, who's been asked that question many times,
oh, of course,
and who has way more insight into everything than I do. And I know that he would say, you know, of course, you have to be hopeful. Mm-hmm. You have to try. Mm-hmm. You have to, as you mentioned, you know, you have to have community. You can't just think at the kind of meta level of protesting big government, but you know, you've got to also look at what's happening in your community and try to build a grassroots community to lobby for change and progress. And yeah, of course I'm hopeful, but I think it's time to say enough is enough.
Have you been labeled the liberal left media? Have you been sort of criticized for, oh, you guys, you know, just that whole polarizing kind of point distinction that it seems a lot of critics like to make?
Well, we haven't shown the film in the U.S. yet.
Ah.
So I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah. And what about people and guests that you met along the way? Anybody that you interviewed that sort of threw up their hands and said, no, I'm sorry, I'm out?
Well, not really that put up their hands and said I'm out, but we have a variety of different points of view, mm-hmm, in the film, mm-hmm, and different kinds of different people with different backgrounds.
Of course,
I mean, Carl Bernstein, legendary investigative journalist who, with Bob Woodward, you know, exposed Watergate for what it was and basically brought down President Nixon. He doesn't have the same set of thoughts in his head as Jeremy Scahill, right? But he's a product of, to some extent, the mainstream media. But he also grew up reading I.F. Stone from the age of 11 because his parents subscribed.
Sure. Yep.
And he said, I would come home, you know, from school, and my parents wouldn't be home yet, so I'd be the first one to get my hands on I.F. Stone's Weekly every week when it arrived. And so, I mean, but he says, you know, the mainstream media are not, to him, inherently bad.
Right.
He doesn't talk a lot. It doesn't seem to have much to say about the corporate ownership of all these media. But he believes in good journalism, no matter who's doing it, you know, and completely believes in the kind of journalism that I.F. Stone did. And as he said, just calling bullshit on government lies. So others in the film have a more anti-corporate view, who are just totally dismissive of the mainstream media. I mean, I think we have to be careful because there are a lot of... careful in the sense that I don't want to alienate journalists, and there are many good ones working within mainstream media newsrooms in the U.S. and Canada. I hope we can inspire them, you know, to create pressure on their managing editor.
Push back a little.
Yeah, you know, their managing editor is getting pressured. If they're in television, the pressure is coming from the executive producer of the News Hour or the news magazine, who's totally obsessed by ratings, probably, mm-hmm, especially if he's, mm-hmm, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And he's getting pressure from higher-ups who are even more obsessed with the corporate objectives. So that managing editor definitely needs pressure from below, from journalists, saying, no, I don't want to cover this fluff that you're sending me out to cover. You know, here's a meaningful story. Here's an important story that's not getting covered. You know, and it's also like, don't follow the pack all the time.
Right,
don't follow
right.
the herd.
Sure.
And push. So I hope reporters like that in the mainstream media, I think many of them will like this film and agree with it and be inspired by
it. Yeah, I think so too, Fred. I mean, are you afraid of being labeled a conspiracist? You know,
No,
not at all.
You're a journalist. I'm a filmmaker.
And a journalist and a filmmaker.
And are my opinions identical to any person in that film? No, we're all a different mix, right? But generally speaking, I felt that what's in that 92-minute film is really important to get out into the world. And all of these people have important things to say. Some of them require thought on the part of You know, I hope I made a film that will make people think.
Yeah, me too.
Because that's what I like. I like to see films that make people think.
Absolutely, yeah. I had this feeling that this isn't necessarily about getting outside of the box. It's about getting outside of the box that's, you know, within the box, if that makes sense.
At least see the box for what it is.
Exactly. See, try
and
to
of course there are
reveal
obstacles.
It.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I worked in the mainstream media, and there were some of us who just knew how to get around the obstacles. Right, and you persuade your executive producer. You cajole him. You embarrass him into covering the story that you think is important, even though he'd rather do some stupid fluffy piece. You know, you get a correspondent on your side if you're at a news magazine. The journalists themselves want to do good journalism.
Sure.
Most of
them,
you know.
Well, I think it's a brilliant film. I really do.
I thoroughly
enjoyed it, and a well-deserved standing ovation.
Thank you.
So I think, isn't the opening line from Nixon?
Yeah.
I have never obstructed justice, is the opening line. It's kind of, isn't that sort of a mantra for what you're trying with the film, is to not obstruct justice?
Yeah.
So in a sense, to turn that almost on its head, and then to turn it on its head again, I suppose. It's
Nixon. Troubling.
It's just comical.
He never looked like he was telling the truth.
Well,
so
yes.
I don't. You know, it almost wasn't surprising when we found out about Watergate. But I mean, there are other politicians who come across a lot better than Nixon, and yet, God knows what is happening. I mean, and even you know, President Obama, who. I mean, we all had great hope for, I think, many of us. And as Cenk Uygur says in his segment in our film, Cenk Uygur, who does an internet TV show daily called The Young Turks, he said, and he has subscribers. That's how he survives. He doesn't have grants from foundations or anything.
A lot of guys are going that way.
Yeah.
And selling coffee mugs.
That's where
to raise money.
Yeah, they do a lot of that too at The Young Turks, but. But as he said, you know, you got to be willing to lose subscribers by doing what you believe is right.
Right.
And he said, I lost subscribers when I started criticizing President Obama and saying, wait a minute, that's not a progressive position. That's not a progressive position. And he said, we lost viewers and listeners. I guess it's viewers. It's not a radio show anymore. But he said, you got to be willing to do that. And I.F. Stone was willing to do that. He was an iconoclast. And he didn't follow, you know, the pack even on the left. And he was willing to write unpopular things that some on the left didn't want to hear, and lost subscribers. And as Cenk Uygur said, though, Cenk says I criticized Obama for his policies that didn't seem to comport with the progressive campaign that he had waged for the presidency. But then those people came back. And those viewers came back to his show, and even more of them came back when they realized, oh, damn, you were right. And like most people in the progressive community are kind of there now, that this guy that they had great hopes for, unfortunately, I'm talking about President Obama, he didn't deliver on the hope. And maybe he couldn't. I don't know.
And in some ways, I guess, too early to tell. Really, history will have something else to say, I'm sure, as people look back.
Yeah.
I love the fact that, you know, in another theme, Fred, and we've got to wrap it up here now, I think, and maybe we can do part two down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But another theme for me this year in the not only the docs and the narrative films has been this idea is we can't remain silent.
Yeah,
we've got to speak up, pay attention to the details, and speak to power and whatever that means, on a daily basis.
I keep thinking of... whenever I read anything about Black Lives Matter, I think of there's a great quote attributed to Frederick Douglass, a brilliant African-American orator and statesman, who 100 years ago, when he was near death, said to a young black man who asked him, you know, what's your advice? How do we get our rights? And it was one word repeated three times: agitate, agitate, agitate.
Nice. What a great way to end the interview. Fred Peabody here at the Toronto International Film Festival, the world premiere of All Governments Lie, Truth, Deception, and the Spirit of I.F. Stone. Two things you need to do. One, see this film and to get out and get a copy of Manufacturing Consent as soon
and
as
also
possible.
Oh, third thing. Go to our website.
And go to the website.
Which is allgovernmentslie.com. There's a lot of stuff on there that we couldn't get into the film.
Yes.
And
excellent.
Also you can check the live Twitter feeds of all of the independent journalists in our film, which is makes it you know something you can go to every
it's
day.
It's great. Makes it a little more interactive and a little more actionable in a sense. Yeah. Congratulations, Fred.
Thank you so much, David.
Thanks for the film, and I hope everybody gets to see it.
Thanks so much.